From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 6th day of February, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Ed Ossett from University of Minnesota Extension. Kurt Kimmel is away today at the AgMarket.net event in Nashville, Tennessee. A bit later in the program, we'll check the weather forecast too, that with Mark Russo at Everstream Analytics. And along the way, I'll bring you up to speed on the agricultural news for the day, including some information about that Chinese balloon, farmland investments by China, and what some senators and representatives are thinking about in Congress. I'll also remind you to pick up your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. Get yourself registered for that event online at willag.org during this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $6.79. That was up a penny and a quarter. The May at $6.77 3/4, 2 1/4 higher. In December, $5.97 3/4, up 1 3/4. March beans were down 10 3/4 today. Settlement price at $15.21 1/4 for the lead. The May at $15.14 1/2, down 11 cents. A new crop November, a 2.5 cent loss at $13.67 1/4. Bean meal futures at $489, down $7.50. The bean oil at $59.31, up 25 cents. Soft red winter wheat, $7.50 1/4, 6.5 lower for the March contract. The hard red at $8.76, up 3 for the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the lead at $164.47 1/2. That's the April contract at 35 cents higher for 100 pounds. Feeder cattle at $187.70, up $1.60 for the day. And lean hogs, $82.72 1/2, down $3.75. Crude oil at $74.90 a barrel, rather $74.08 a barrel, up 69 cents. The U.S. diesel fuel at $2.75 7/10. That's heating oil, a penny and 0.7 cents lower. And the wholesale price of gasoline today, up a nickel and a tenth at $2.37 2/10 cents per gallon on this Monday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Ed Ossett, agricultural economist from University of Minnesota and Extension there. Hi, Ed. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So I've been thinking quite a bit about the marketplace as we transition over the next several months from old to new crop, what that might mean for both corn and soybeans. And I have to tell you, I'm a little skittish about the marketplace at this time. What have you been watching?
Well, I've been feeling skittish too. I think everyone is. We're concerned that this thing is about to tip over. But let me tell you some work I've done just in the last week. And it starts with, I'm going to take a lecture out of my course in commodity marketing. I talk to my students about signs of a fundamentally strong market. Now, you know, the strong corn or soybean market, what signals do you look for there? Well, I think there are three of them. The obvious one is futures. You're looking at prices. Are they going up? Are they going down? And there we can agree, you know, they're sort of struggling to hang on, going sideways at best, a little bit lower, and we're wondering if it's about to break. But I think there are two other signs. One is a strong or improving basis. And I'm looking at my own, and all your listeners have to think of their own area. Many of your listeners are in Illinois, but here in southwestern Minnesota, we've looked at a corn basis all January and continues today at 5 under the March. Now, Todd, you may not be impressed by this, but I've got 34 years of data for the southwestern Minnesota market, and 5 under the March in the month of January and starting February is the best basis I've got on record, 34 years. I can find two or three other years where 10 to 12 under ruled, including 2013, following a drought year. But a strong, you know, someone's telling me this, that demand is poor in corn, and you know, the dollar is a little too high, and this is going on, and that's going on. And I'm like, well, why is it so damn hard to buy corn then? I mean, that basis is strong. Now, I'll give you another, the last sign. And this is a very subtle sign. You're watching the carries in the market. March, May, July corn, March, May, July soybeans. And I'll just stick with old crop. And this got sent my way, you know, came to my attention about a week ago, that the March, July corn spread, which has been trading for months at a 4-6 and inverse, which is noteworthy in itself. The March at an inverse to July, higher than the July, is not a common event, but there it's been. It's been 4-6 cents inverse. That thing strengthened during the month of January, ended the month closer to 14 or 15 cent inverse. And even this morning, as it's backed off a bit, it's a 12 cent inverse. Markets where the inverse is increasing, that's a fundamentally strong market, not a weak market. So that bothers me. You know, the same thing's going on in soybeans. I can find a couple other years where the soybean basis in southern Minnesota, and I'm going to believe this applies to your listeners in Illinois, a couple of years in the last 30 where the soybean basis was modestly better in January, early February. But it's a strong basis. And the March-July spread in soybeans has gone from, it was trading in a small carry. In other words, the July was a, call it an 8 to 10 cent premium to the May contract for months up until early January. And now it's trading at a 17 cent inverse. That's a 25 cent move in the spread, going from a 10 cent carry March below the July to now a 17 cent inverse March over the July. And you know what, Todd? That's not a bearish sign. That's a bullish sign. So I guess my thought is, and I have to add here, Todd, I've been remarkably wrong at times in the past. But having said that, I'm feeling better about the price outlook, at least over the next couple months. Let's not get carried away and go out 6-8 months, but at least in the medium term here, out 2 to 3 months, I'm feeling like this thing is not about to break.
Well, let's go through some of the things that might be the underlying fundamentals of this marketplace. Exports for corn don't appear to be the case. So is it domestic usage for corn? Is it domestic usage for the soybean crush? On both of them, I suppose, in this case. Is it the fact or an idea that both the corn and soybean crops were smaller than what USDA said in January for last fall's harvest? Or is there something else happening?
Or is it just producers who have that strong a grip on what's in storage, and yet I don't think the amount of grain in storage is all that is overwhelming? Or is it a little bit of all of the above? All I know is that as a former grain buyer, if I'm paying a high basis, I don't like doing that. You know, I'm trying to buy low, not buy high. And by the way, the markets I follow in southwest Minnesota, they're the weakest markets around. The ethanol plants and the crush facilities, you know, within a 100-mile radius, they're all 25, 30, 40 cents higher than my firm basis in southwestern Minnesota. You can't always put your finger on the why. I can't put my finger on the why. All I know is that it is. And that strong basis and narrowing spread or increasing inverse is not the sign of a weak market.
What are farmers to do?
Well, don't completely fall in love with this thing. I mean, it's a great opportunity if you've got old crap in the bin. It feels good to sell high, and I think right now selling high is a good idea. Get, you know, look for that good average price. Do I believe that we're going to rally greatly in the months ahead? No, I don't. But I do believe that the fundamentals are there, hopefully, to keep us at a good price for a few more months. So, you know, think about that old crap. Don't fall in love with it. You don't want to hang on to it too long. It is only early February, but I'll give you about 4 months to think that through, okay? You ought to have bins empty by the end of June. New crop, we continue to hang in there at modestly profitable levels in December corn and November soybeans. And I'm encouraging people to get something on the books. You ought to be, 10, 20, 30% priced at these levels and then hope like heck you're wrong.
Good enough. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Todd, you take care. It's warm up here in Minnesota. We're thawing snow.
Oh, well, we don't have snow. And we really
we
haven't.
We got all sorts of it. Okay, you take care.
You too. That is Ed Ossett, agricultural economist from the University of Minnesota. Well, a couple of notes here. Tomorrow, I'll be hosting the Illinois Crop Management Conference at the iHotel right here in Champaign-Urbana. At that same venue, Premier Cooperative will be hosting its Customer Appreciation Conference. I'll talk to different folks from each of the conferences, and you'll hear them over time. Tomorrow, Arlen Suderman and Josh Linville from StoneX will be at the Premier Cooperative event. I'll try to catch up with them, bring you some information about fertilizer prices and what Arlen's thinking as it's related to commodity prices before the Wednesday WASDE report. And then I'll also catch up with the folks like Nick Sider, Emerson Nafziger, Emily Heaton, and our agronomist here on campus at the Illinois Crop Management Conference. Should be a great day for me. I'll be there along with Max Armstrong. He'll be hosting one event. I'll be hosting the other. So should be a hopping agricultural day there at the iHotel. The other item, speaking of conferences, is that you should sign up for the All Ag Outlook. That's at the Beef House on the 7th day of March. There's still some time there, but the sooner you get signed up, the happier and more at ease I will be. The cost is just $30. The agricultural economists, the brokers, some folks from John Deere will be there. Should be a great day. The $30 includes a cinnamon roll from the Beef House and coffee and your Beef House meal at the noon hour. Join us on Tuesday, the 7th day of March at the Beef House. You can sign up, register right now, either at the Farm Doc Daily website, farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, or at the willag.org website at willag.org. In either case, look for the All Day Ag Outlook. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with some information that has come from the United Soybean Export Council. They say China's state stockpiler, Sinograin, is rumored to be about to release rapeseed oil and soybean oil reserves into the marketplace, but that this is likely a typical reserves rotation move rather than an initiative to move domestic prices. Sinograin keeps stocks of different commodities such as soybeans, corn, pork, and veg oils, among others, for food security and food inflation in China, and it rotates those reserves usually at two-year intervals to avoid the overaging of the stocks. No official announcement has been made, writes USEC, that's the U.S. Export Council. In other news, sources also indicate Sinograin had secured 4 South American soybean oil vessels over the weekend, and European sellers were also heard mentioning Chinese rapeseed oil buying interest. Now, here's a story you may not have heard about, but that certainly in North Dakota, parts of Minnesota, they've been talking about for some time. First, it was a competition issue, but recently, foreign ownership of U.S. farmland, especially by China, has become a U.S. national security issue. A Chinese spy balloon spotted over Montana, and now a U.S. Air Force warning proposed Chinese land buys in North Dakota are too close to a military drone testing facility. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley targeted the issue in telling farm reporters about his bill to include USDA in the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States.
CFIUS made a decision that they didn't have any authority to stop China from buying farmland in North Dakota, which seems to be very close to some of our military facilities. Now, I'm not saying that I know for sure there's a connection to our national security and Chinese buying that farmland.
But the Washington Post reports Air Force Assistant Secretary Andrew Hunter wrote North Dakota senators the proposed corn milling site presents a significant threat to national security, citing impacts to military operations in the area. And Grassley fears more farmland could fall into China's hands in the future.
Nearly half of U.S. farmland is owned by Americans over 65 years of age. So that means in the next 20 years, it could be up to 370 million acres of farmland could be changing hands.
A second Grassley bill would bar the farm credit system from lending to foreign investors for U.S. farmland. A bill enacted last year is aimed at transparency.
Under the bill, USDA is required to build an interactive database to show foreign ownership disclosures. And the USDA will report to Congress on the impact of these investments.
Especially in driving up farmland prices. Most foreign-owned farmland here in the United States is held by our allies, including Canada and the Netherlands, along with Italy and Germany. USDA says China, Russia, and Iran together only accounted for some 200,000 acres in 2019, but an amount that now seems understated considering the latest national security concerns. And finally today, House Agriculture Chairman Glenn G.T. Thompson recently announced subcommittee chairs and jurisdictions for the 118th Congress. Representative Austin Scott of Georgia will serve as the vice chair of the full committee and chair of the General Farm Commodities, Risk Management, and Credit Subcommittee. California's Dole LaMalfa will chair the Subcommittee on Forestry, and Indiana's Jim Baird is a chair of the Subcommittee on Conservation, Research, and Biotechnology. Meanwhile, Minnesota's Brad Finstad was appointed chair of the Subcommittee on Nutrition, Foreign Agriculture, and Horticulture. And finally, Tracy Mann of Kansas was appointed chair of the Livestock Subcommittee, and South Dakota's Dusty Johnson is the chair of the Subcommittee on Commodity Markets, Digital Assets, and Rural Development. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Hey, don't forget to pick up your tickets, or at least to get yourself registered for the All Day Ag Outlook at willag.org, farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. The event is Tuesday, the 7th day of March. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mark Russo is here with Everstream Analytics. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's begin in the Southwest with the hard red winter wheat belt. It had been dry, rough conditions, cold, and I suppose quite a bit of ice and rainfall. What happened there that you're concerned about or maybe think is a good thing?
Yeah, overall, no big concerns with last week's cold, albeit pretty anomalous, but areas that didn't have protective snow cover, temperatures weren't cold enough to cause any kind of problems. Actually, some of the moisture was a good thing, a benefit, when it eventually melted into the soils. But that precipitation now was actually needed because looking ahead, much of the plains is going back into a drier mode, a bit of a warmer mode the next 10 days as well before a little bit of cooler air comes in. But all in all, at least quiet in terms of Plains hard red belt weather over the next week or two.
Before we go to South America, anything of note in the heart of the Corn Belt?
Yeah, we're seeing above normal precipitation over the next week or two. So this kind of transition from what had been very heavy rainfall into the western U.S., especially California. That has transitioned a bit more into the central U.S. outside of the plains, but that is helping improve soil moisture and even continues to improve river levels here in the nation's midsection.
In South America, what are conditions like in Argentina and Brazil this week?
Yeah, for this week, it is hot and dry across Argentina, as well as far southern Brazil in the state of Rio Grande do Sul. Those are the areas that need rain the most, and they're not going to see much in the way of any significant rainfall this week. Next week is the next opportunity in both of those areas, so it puts a lot of emphasis on rains materializing. Still some debate as to how much rain those areas will get, but right now it doesn't look like any kind of game changer or any, again, start. Does not look like to be any start to a more frequent rainy pattern in those areas with the poorest crop conditions.
That takes care of Argentina, the southern part of Brazil in Mato Grosso, where they are now harvesting soybeans. I think they were 15% along. I can't quite remember how far along they are. What are conditions like for them?
Yeah, overall, we see favorable harvest weather over the next couple of weeks. This is basically a normal kind of later rainy season pattern. So still some rains around. You can't rule out some isolated harvest delays, but no sign of any extremely wet patterns in center west Brazil or down into Paraná, you know, where they're harvesting as well.
Yeah, and that sets up, I suppose, a good planting season for the safrinha or second crop corn.
It does here, Todd. The fact that rainfall here of late has been normal and more of that expected throughout the month of February. Soil moisture is looking very good here for this upcoming winter corn crop in Brazil.
There is one other place I'd like you to check in on, Ukraine, the Black Sea area. For the beginning of their growing season, I know it's still early there. Also the beginning of the fighting season again. What are conditions like?
Yeah, kind of a little bit of everything here of late. We've seen some colder weather, but also some warmer weather, certainly more of a warmer bias here in recent weeks. And then we've seen variable precip patterns as well. As of right now, we're not seeing any real strong indication that there's going to be, you know, an extremely wet or extremely dry pattern here coming up. Certainly the next 2 weeks are drier than normal across much of Ukraine and Russia, but right now nothing is really pointing to that lasting of any, you know, for any extended period of time.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He's with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Medium. Tomorrow I'll come to you from the iHotel and the annual Illinois Crop Management Conference. We'll also be able to catch up with Josh Linville and Arlen Suderman, who will be there for a different event, one that belongs to Premier Cooperative, but I've already made arrangements with Josh and Arlen to talk with them, so you can hear from them tomorrow. They're both with StoneX. Don't forget that you can always sign up for our own conference, the WillAg All Day Ag Outlook, at the Beef House online right now today, if you'd like, at willag.org.